And I like the fact that you got two daughters, but I haven't met them. But the one I definitely is my favorite already with her beautiful name.
Oh yes, Cameron. Yes, you're reading the dedication.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean my family means everything to
Yeah.
me, and the kids are truly inspiring.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Rhinoplasty Podcast with me, Dr. Cameron McIntosh. It is season three. We're coming to you live from Berlin, and I have managed to drag in one of the co-directors of this incredible meeting, the IMR HIS meeting, the top rhinoplasty societies of the world around here. And for the second time on the podcast, I've got Sam Most with me. Sam, thank you for being here.
Awesome to be here. I've got one question for you. Why wasn't I in season two?
Oh, that's a deep one.
Kidding.
Oh yeah, yes,
Kidding.
I caught
I'm just kidding.
that.
I think it's so great you're doing this, and I'm honored that you're
Thanks.
having me. And I can't imagine anybody wants to hear me talk anymore after last time. But it's just great to be here. I love talking about rhinoplasty. I love talking to you.
That's
So
great.
whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, so I say to Sam beforehand, I say, let's talk about the evidence-based medicine group. See, no, it's too advanced. Let's just chat away. It's
I
too
didn't say it was
boring.
too advanced. I said nobody wants to hear that anymore, but I'd be
Okay.
happy to talk about it. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's close to my heart. And I think it's something we all need to think a lot
Yeah,
about.
sure. So Sam, it was taking the listeners back. We saw each other about 6 months ago in South
Yeah.
Africa when we brought you in there, and you Wolfgang pulled out at the last minute. Unfortunately, we ended up having you to do five live surgeries in like 24 hours.
Five live surgeries. Yes. But we did it. We did it.
Yeah.
We did it. It was great.
And they
It was
came out
great. And you
beautiful.
guys all, I mean, obviously it was a team effort and it was great. And I'm just thankful for the opportunity. It's great to see beautiful country, a beautiful people, good friends.
That's
And
fantastic.
it was my first time there. It was a really long trip, as you remember. By the way, this guy, I got off the plane and he took me straight to a boat. And we went whale watching. I hadn't slept in about 30 hours, and we just took off from there. And you know what? It was worth it. It was just so much energy, and you exude so much energy, so it's infectious. And
That's
I
awesome.
just made it through. And great society you started there. Really good group of rhinoplasty surgeons, young and older.
Yeah, we got a group of
So
eight South Africans that come out to the meeting.
yeah, here,
Yes,
great.
which is really
Yeah,
amazing.
that's great.
So I've got a little surprise for you guys. If those of you who aren't listening, you I mean are watching the video, I managed to sneak in a copy of this new book called Comprehensive Rhinoplasty: Structural and Preservation Concepts by Sam P. Most. So Sam, I mean, I know you don't like the limelight here, but this is so fascinating. I mean, you've been publishing a lot of papers, etc., but finally, you brought the book out.
Yeah,
So
was
tell
a
the listeners about
it
that,
was a
eh?
big undertaking. For years I stayed away from the idea of writing a textbook. And around 20 years in practice, which is a couple of years ago, I finally started warming up to the idea because I thought, well, it'd be nice to sort of consolidate some of my philosophies after 2 decades of rhinoplasty. Listen, we're all students, I'm still learning. And also because I think there was a gap in the, at least in the textbooks, regarding fusing structural and preservation concepts. And so I wanted to have a comprehensive book, which wasn't three huge volumes or something that someone could get through, that goes through the basics, structural rhinoplasty, how to approach patients, all the way through preservation and then revision and complex case concepts. And so it sort of came together. And my philosophy was also that I wanted to be completely my voice. So all the people who wrote these chapters with me, and I wrote all these chapters, are my former fellows.
Wow, eh?
So
Okay.
they all know exactly how I do things. So I was heavily involved in either completely writing the chapter or co-writing it with them.
And it's sold through QMP, they're the
Yes,
publishers, eh?
yes, yeah.
Wow, eh? So I'm just
Yeah.
paging through this and having a look at how many people were actually part of this.
Yeah.
Where did you find the time?
I've got a supportive team, a supportive group, a loving family, and I just was able to make it happen. Yeah. So I don't know where the time comes from. It's really daunting these tasks when you put them in front of you, but then you split them down into small steps for anything, as you know. And you just take one step at a time and you measure your progress and eventually you get to the end.
So tell me a bit more about this stuff. What were the highlights and what were the lowlights in getting this book together?
I was super excited. One of the highlights was just deciding to take the plunge.
Yes.
You know, the tough parts are when you're in the meat of it and you're just trying to get things done. And then at the end, editing and finally putting it together. Organizing the artwork was a big task. We have a wonderful artist, Chris Gralup, who did all this artwork in here. I've worked with her for many years, and this is the first big project we did where we did an entire textbook. She did all the illustrations in my lectures and in my publications and journals. But this time we did the whole textbook, and she's wonderful to work with. And then editing the videos was tough. In the end, I actually did it all myself.
So there's also videos included.
There are four full cases in there, and also through the text, when there's a technique, there's a tag to a particular part of one of the videos that has that technique. So you, for example, lateral curl strut graph, for example, next to that there'll be a video tag, and you can go and just look at how to do that, for example, things like that.
But that's brilliant. I mean, it literally, I think in the market, it's needed because there's a lot of complexity in rhinoplasty. And if you want to start, like, where do you start?
Right. And I think especially if you're thinking about preservation, I think it's good if you don't want to give up all the structural work. So, yeah. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for bringing it up.
So now tell me, there's one chapter missing here, though. Beth Most, Mrs. Sam Most, being married to a rhinoplasty surgeon.
She's not going to watch this, I think. So, no, I mean, we've been together. Year will be our 30-year anniversary of marriage, and we were together 5 years before that. So we've been together for most of our lives, and I'm just a super lucky guy. I can't think of what it would be like if I hadn't met her and convinced her to be with
And I like the fact that you're two daughters, but I haven't met them. But the one I definitely is my favorite already with her beautiful name.
Oh yes, Cameron. Yes, you're reading the dedication. Yes, I mean my family means everything to me, and the kids are truly inspiring, my two daughters. I never had sisters, so to see these two girls grow up into young women, and do their thing has just been amazing for me.
Awesome. So Sam, the one thing I want to ask you, I mean, this is fantastic. So I'm going to put this book down for a sec, is the how have you found over the last couple of years of bringing in like preservation teaching into your practice? Because obviously, I mean, I think you and Dean are really the forefront of the teachers of preservation, and Aaron, but Aaron's not necessarily in an academic environment, whereas especially you are. How have you managed to try and incorporate that now?
Well, it's just like anything else. I mean, I think you have to be really honest about what you've learned and where you've found, difficulties and mistakes. And I think that's the key is transparency. And I think that, one of the important concepts that I do teach and lecture about, and I hate the word lecture because it sounds very, condescending or whatever, but talk about it, is that we all are continually learning, right? We're all continually learning. And so if you're static, then you're sort of doing a disservice to yourself and to your patients. And so I'm always trying to learn new things. Preservation is no different than any of the other things, really. I mean, it is a big leap forward. It's conceptually, after having done conventional humper section for your whole career, then suddenly to have this idea of impacting is a sea change. It's very different, but the concept that you're going to continue to learn and then teach what you learn is no different. So, I think the keys, though, are, always be skeptical when you're learning. Don't believe everything you hear,
Absolutely.
especially from me, but from anybody. If anything sounds too perfect to be true, then it really is, right? If someone says you should always do this or never do this unless it's something really obvious, then be skeptical. And I'm always skeptical. And so I didn't really jump into preservation. It took a couple of years of watching some of these folks do the open preservation before I did it. And when I talk about it, I say, it's not for every single patient. I think that preservation is now a term that can be applied to anything where you're preserving the cartilaginous vault and even somewhere you're partially destroying it. And so there's a whole spectrum of different procedures. It's not a binary decision between complete resection and complete preservation. There's all
Absolutely.
these different things in between, right? So that's really exciting. And that's another thing I try to say is it's not a binary decision. You have a lot of different ways of treating the dorsum now. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's just like anything else, but I think it's an exciting time in rhinoplasty. It really
No,
is. I
absolutely.
think things were getting a little stagnant, and the last 5 years has really been revolutionary.
Okay, last topic I want to chat about is schnoz. No,
Yes.
nah. So, two things is, did you think that when you guys first published it and researched it, what, how many, 15, 20 years ago, it would be where it is now?
Oh, it was only 6 years ago.
6 years, it feels like
Yeah,
two.
actually, 2017.
2017.
Well, I saw a need around 2010. I was thinking there's a need for something like this because I've been using the nose questionnaire, but it really didn't measure any aesthetics, and there wasn't really a great, and I'm saying with an asterisk, there wasn't really a great, well-validated aesthetic and functional questionnaire. And so we developed one and we published in 2014, I think it was, called the Rhino Scale. I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but it worked out great to Rhino. And it was soundly rejected by the best journals. Why? Because the validation methodology we used for the psychometrics was the same that had been used for the row and the nose and everything else. But now, in 2014, this was considered dated and not up to snuff scientifically. So keep that in your mind when you use the nose and the row and all these other things. So then we went back to the drawing board a couple of years later, and I enlisted a couple of colleagues who are vastly smarter than I am at the psychometrics, who are world famous for that, and we went about doing it again, and we did it the right way, and it was generated. So to answer your question, I was hoping that it would be something that people would find useful. I'm very happy that it's been adopted worldwide, and so it's sort of just kind of completely fulfilled what I wanted it to do, and I just hope pe more people can use it.
Yeah, but they will. So the other thing around schnoz that I've been pondering is, so it gets published 6 years ago.
2017, yeah.
Do you think that possibly there's a element that we need to look at in these scoring sheets about social media and the influence that has on patients? I don't know. It's just an idea I've been mulling over and wondering because I think this world is so obsessed with this instant TikToks, Snapchat, quick little, and selfie generation. More, and even in the last 6 years, it's changed a lot. I don't know.
It's funny you should mention that because that's something that we're actively pursuing.
There you go.
We actually have some validated questionnaires on social media use that we're starting to use, and we're going to examine that and see what the effects are. And it is true. It is true. I think it'd be cool to develop something particularly for plastic surgery patients that measures their social media use, but it's more than social media use. It's and this is the outside influence thing. So I have this equation that I use sometimes in lectures, and it's an old equation called, it says happiness equals reality minus expectations. Okay. And so happiness is what we both want, surgeons and patients. Reality is what you can achieve. Expectations are what they want. So unless your reality is at least matching expectations, you're going to get into a negative number for happiness. So, but expectations, then, this is my original thought. I broke it down into a complex equation that is the sum of the number of people who influence that person. Okay. So this is a sigma n, whatever it is. And then the lambda is the influence level of that. So if there are 10 people who influence them, but the lambda is a zero, then there's no influence on the expectations. But some people, no matter what they think, they're so insecure, everything is about what other people think about them. And this is like social media users to a certain extent. They want likes, they want so on, or if they're very happy with their nose, but they go home and their husband says, "It's ugly, I don't like it." I've had this happen. They're happy at 3 months, 4 months, but then they meet some new boyfriend who says he doesn't like it or something, and then suddenly. So the influence of other people is something you really want to measure, not just social media. So if there's some way we could measure that, that would be
That could
really
be very
cool.
interesting.
That would be very cool. And I think that would, that goes kind of along with nasal self-esteem, which is question five on the questionnaire. How much of your self-worth is tied up in your nasal appearance, your esteem? So, these are all interesting questions to
So
answer.
it's interesting because now you, if I'm correct in understanding of saying how that one person gets influenced by all the 10 people around them, but it's the opposite as well. So, like, say you die, then it's really bad for everybody around you. They're the guys who suffer, but the person who's dead is not suffering anymore. And they say it's the same if you're stupid. It's really bad for
you. Are you saying something about me now?
there can be the negative vibe coming out from dare I say, the patient as well, causing...
Well, I mean, external influence on your happiness is not really healthy, right? So it can work for you as a doctor if you do a bad job and everybody tells the patient that it looks good. But the worst part, and they're influenced by that, but you really want someone to just kind of judge things for themselves and have the self-confidence to sort of feel that way. And if somebody, you know, all of their self-esteem is kind of rolled up into what other people think about them, whether it's likes on Instagram, how many likes they get, how many friends tell them what a great nose they have. You know, if this affirmation is really that important to them, then it can work really against you.
Absolutely.
And it's just not a healthy sign anyway.
Yeah.
So that'd be cool to measure.
Awesome. Guys, thanks for listening to this legend, Sam Most. Sam, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Great. Have you on the show again, eh?
Yeah.
Guys, come back next week and listen, go out and buy Comprehensive Rhinoplasty. Seriously, I'm making the pitch here because I think it's a fantastic book. And we'll catch up with you guys again next week.